Okay, and now we're here with Kevin. Just because it is the beginning of the Lenten season. Kevin, do you still observe Lent? If you do, to what capacity do you observe this Christian time of year?
Quick answer. I don't. Only because I'm doing other things now. Like it's, excuse me, I'm drinking a soda water, so I'm a little there. You can edit that out if you want to, or you can leave it in so people know that that I have gas like a normal person. But yeah, I stopped. I don't observe Lent anymore. Now I will show up for Ash Wednesday services, and I'll probably go to Easter Vigil. Which is really funny because like I never saw myself like I used to chastise like the Easter and Christmas Christians who only went on the high holy days, and I'm like, and now I am one, and I'm like, I can't like I am the person that I was warned about. Whoopsie. Lukewarm. No, but like my practices are different now. I'm observing different calendars and different holidays and different auspicious seasons. Like for example, this past weekend, actually on the new moon in Pisces, was actually Mahashivratri, which is the basically like watch night for the Hindus who are devoted to Shiva and anyone else who's devoted to Shiva, which is just another name for God. It was incredible. We had a wonderful time. I was on a retreat, so I'm coming back feeling refreshed. So that's what I did, excuse me, rather than getting into Lent, I did yoga and sang kirtan and hanging out with a bunch of hippies in the mountain all weekend. That's what I did. So that's how I'm kicking off Lent is high vibes, even though I'm not really observing Lent at all. What about you? Any of y'all?
I had to do an impromptu Lent mass because it's snowing in Portland. It started snowing last night at about 4-ish in the afternoon, and then it kept snowing all night. So me and my friends went out to a little smoke shack. We burnt some herbs, and then we used those ashes, and we did one of my friends' dad's is a pastor, so we read I'm pretty sure like the UCC liturgy for the night. And then we gave ourselves ashes, and that was our service.
That's beautiful. I think that's wonderful. I think 'cause like Ash Wednesday is such a powerful, is still very powerful. I mean, like regardless of like what you believe or profess, like it's a recognition of your finiteness. And also a reminder that you belong to this earth. And the earth will reclaim you. The earth is your mother. She's been holding you the whole time, and she will hold you in the end as well. It's beautiful. I could go on forever about that. So,
No,
but yeah,
maybe
I.
we,
No, you go ahead.
Then maybe let's focus on that for a little bit. How
Sure.
do you, how has your relationship with like the earth and nature changed? Like, was there any relationship like in your former evangelical life at all, or was it just kind of the thing that was there and that's maybe something you've developed?
No, I think that I was actually like fully in favor of the exploitation of the earth, and I didn't care because Jesus is going to come back no matter what. In the end, God is going to make it right in the end. And like also like growing up in the family I did, like Fox News is not far from the television set. And so like the information that my family received about what climate change was or is or what was actually happening was skewed to say the least. And so I mean, I grew up believing that Revelation was about America. I literally thought that that was us. I also grew up believing that Left Behind was like an actual like sound doctrine. Ugh, trauma, emotional damage. So I would actually say that in my former life, I didn't give a shit about the earth because the thing about it is what evangelicalism does is it teaches you not to care about your own body. So of course you can't care about the earth. And that's what's very interesting. And I think that this is like a pervasive problem, not just within Christianity, but throughout culture, is you want people to care about the earth. You want people to rise up and start a revolution. People don't even know who they are. Like
How do you
people
care
are.
for your body now?
Lots of water and lots of sleep, at least 8 hours if I can get it. I mean, that's like that sounds very basic, but I'm 33 now, and I really do have to like I'm not as young as I once were. Like as like I was going to a retreat and then running around New York City for 3 days. I am tired. In my back in my old days, like I was this close to saying, I was like, I don't know if I can do this tonight, you guys. But I'm glad I'm here. So I'd say, like, how do I take care of my body and like love my body? Is like I move it in ways that feel good, and for that, it looks like yoga and it looks like weightlifting, and it also looks like napping. Like I love napping. Yeah, I try to feed myself foods that make my body feel good, and sometimes it means it's chicken nuggets, and sometimes it means I'm eating a like kale salad or some shit, and not because I want like I hate myself. It's because I love a well-dressed salad. Like, and it, like, that's the thing, is just like, I don't know. My relationship to food really shifted. It kind of like the same way, like in relationship to my body, it shifted. It's like that food is amoral, not immoral, amoral, as in like, it's not a good or bad thing. It just is. And you can have food and you should eat if you're hungry. And I know that sounds weird, maybe, but for me, it was like, oh, I don't have to keep hating my body anymore. Like that's something that we learn too much in our, at least I'll say it for myself, that's what I learned in my upbringing, and I think that's what a lot of people unfortunately face as well.
I absolutely agree. Oh, sorry, you want to go?
You go.
I'm trying this new thing of, as a plus size person, ignoring every doctor and ignoring every parent who's ever told me to use an app. I am starting to listen to my body, and it has changed so many things, but also starting to work out for me and my mental health versus my physical health.
Hello.
And changing my perception of my body in not changing my body, but changing how I look in the mirror.
Yes, because
I
you're
think that is so much
being
more powerful than anything you could ever do.
You nailed it. I'm ready for your TED talk. I'm ready for you to get out there and, do the things you're ready for. But that's really it, because there's nothing
Thank
wrong
you.
with your body. There's nothing wrong with you.
No. I
Like,
am completely healthy, yet every doctor has told me to lose weight.
and every doctor is full of shit. And we all, like,
Absolutely.
it's one of those things where, like, it's funny, like, trigger warning for anyone who has like body things or talking about weight loss and things like that. But what I'm talking about, I think we're like breaking down and trying to push against the bullshit in this conversation. I had a friend of mine, male friend, who male he him pronouns. He reached out and to our little group chat, and he's like, "Guys, I'm really sad because I stepped on the scale." And I was just like, well, that was a mistake, first of all. That was your first mistake. And two, your second mistake is it's one of them fancy ones that gives you, or like sends electrical stuff up through your feet, and then it spits out all the numbers. It's just like, you got this BMI and you got this much fat on your
Oh my
body.
God, I have one of those. And I started calling Faith crying one day because I stepped on it.
Oh my God. Those things are yikes. If you, and especially like if you, it's one of those things like back in the day when they could just tell you how heavy you were, you just had one thing to hate about yourself. Now you have like 14 different things to hate about yourself. It's
For
wild.
me, it actually helped. Because I've stopped focusing on my weight and I started focusing on my muscle mass.
The
But I went
game.
on one of the good ones, like, at the gym that have, like, the good body composition. So I was getting, like, the real numbers. So I stopped looking at the weight number completely. I would like exit out the second I got it, and I would only look at the my muscle mass percentage, and all I cared that it was increasing. That's all I cared about. And for me, that was much more powerful.
And that's what I was also telling my friend. I'm just like, you got to realize two things. One, you do go to the gym 5 times a week. Of course you're going to gain weight, sucka. Like, also, I'm just like, you look so zaddy right now. Like, you look hot. I don't know, like, I'm like, and you're looking at yourself like you're, I don't, like, I can't get inside your brain and fix that for you. But as a gay man sitting here in front of you as a straight dad, you're so hot, okay? If we weren't married and you weren't, you know, in a monogamous agreement, we would be having a different conversation. But it's so wild to me. I'm just like it's, and I think this is also, speaking of Lent and like, a lot of people you like will, you know, restrict or like, oh, I got to give up chocolate or I got to give up this food or I'm going to, like, I got to not do something. Deprivation has never, what has it given us? Not self-control. It's just made a bunch of, as Ram Dass would say, a bunch of horny celibates, you know?
Another question. If one was celebrating Lent, what would your advice be on what they should give up?
Oh, give up looking at evangelical accounts on your social media. I'm so serious. And I think that you should also put in like mute words or, and specifically and intentionally when you see something and it's like, oh no, I don't want to look at that. And I mean that because it is so easy on TikTok or on our social media, and I'm again speaking to myself as well forever. It's so easy for those things to come up in our feed and for us to get triggered either in any direction. And why do I want to be angry? Why do I want to watch this thing and get myself worked up? Because on some level, it's thrilling. There's a part of me, and this is also my Scorpio placements talking probably, I love anger. I'm an Enneagram 8 as well. So like, if that speaks to any of y'all, anger, very familiar with it. Very easy emotion for me to feel. And also it gets my, you know, my hormones jacked up. It gets my heart beating. It's thrilling. So on some level, I'm addicted to the drama. That's why I do. And so a couple years ago, I was like, I don't want to fucking talk about this shit anymore. I don't want to keep looking at the thing that almost killed me. Like, I want to like look at things that are lifting me up, that are making me feel good, that are allowing myself to come alive. So what I would say is give that up for Lent. For 40 days, don't look at shit that triggers you and see what happens. I mean, I think you'd be amazed at the brain space you get back. And that also means not engaging with trolls and not engaging with mean people. You block them and you bless them. Let it go. Because what is it serving you? It's not. It's making you, you're doing it because you want to have a sense of control. You think that if I watch them close enough, if I understand why they're doing this, I'm going to be safe. But the reality is, what do they say? You wanted control, but all you ever had was anxiety.
What does addicted to trauma mean in either your personal life or in the general sense?
I won't even say it's like addicted. Sometimes we want to. Addiction's a very strong word, so maybe I want to back up the use of that word. I know I said it just now, so thank you for just using my words back so I could hear myself. I mean, in some ways, it is kind of like. It's akin to addiction, and just like we think we can't do it differently. We have convinced ourselves that this is the only way because we've only ever done it one way. And also it's like, it's just kind of built into, when it's built into your social habits, it's built into your social habits. And so it's just, it's a matter of like noticing what are my tendencies here. And so it's when people say I'm addicted to the drama or just like, it's like, that's just your mode of operation. And you're unconsciously doing it. And if you were more conscious, meaning, do you see yourself stirring up the drama? Do you see how you sit here and stare at this thing that's traumatizing you for hours? Like, why are you doing that? Well, I don't know. Well, if you don't know, would you like to do something else? Yeah, I would. Well, what would you like to do? Something fun? Something that centers you? Yeah. You want to breathe right now? Sure. And if you're watching this back, I don't know if y'all are going to use the video, but if you watch it back later, like that's my Gollum Schmeagle moment of me talking myself down off of my own high horses. But that's really like how it works. It's like it's very, very gentle. Not once did I need to condemn myself. It's just pure curiosity. That's all you need is like, why do I do that? And as you sit with that question, get real still and don't try to like, your body usually has something to tell you. Your inner self, your true self, I would say, the part of you that is, you know, whole, they have so much wisdom to give you. And when we get quiet, like, then we know. And then once we know, we can do something about it. But regardless of why you're doing it, compassion is always the answer. Point blank, period, forever and ever. I will live on that hill.
Speaking of trolls, if you have not heard, there is a new podcast called The Witch Trials of J.K. Rowling. It is, I will say, I was Ooh. Very skeptical about this podcast because it is advertised as like getting to know the real J.K. Rowling. And there are only two episodes out. And I will say, these two episodes have done a lot of work on humanizing all of that, and particularly like her traumatic experiences as a young woman and beginning to write the Harry Potter series. And so the question is, how do you navigate this kind of way that hurt people also are the people who are most often like transmitting the hurt that they have within themselves? Because that is like kind of what I've seen in that, like the whole J.K. Rowling situation and in other people, like their hurt just gets redirected towards another thing. And then they cannot have any other conversations.
Yeah. Because they're stuck in the trauma. Mm-hmm. And because of their one experience that they had with this other, it's like, what was taught to me is I am not responsible for another person's trauma. And just because someone has trauma doesn't give you a license to be an asshole. Like, I don't care who you are. You can be the most mentally ill person in the world. You can have all the diagnoses. You can be on all the meds. You can be on the spectrum and all those things. But you, like, I know somebody with all of those things, and he is still the kindest person you've ever met in your life. So what I'm saying, all that saying is like, your mental health status is not a excuse to be a dick to people. Point blank, period. And also, your trauma doesn't give you carte blanche to be transphobic. You know? Like, what it comes down to is J.K. Rowling is a bully. And what bullies often do is they paint themselves as, I'm quoting Jeffrey Marsh here, they paint themselves as the victim. And especially if you have money, you can buy a whole podcast series to paint you in a beautiful light. You know? Like, you know, this woman has all the resources in the world. She is a full-blown capitalist. And, you know, like, I just wish she would have showed us who she was sooner so we wouldn't have gotten so wrapped up in her. Because let me tell you what, if J.K. Rowling had said this in the middle of book three, series over, canceled, no one would talk to her again, you know? Except for maybe conservatives, except for they hate her too because she writes about witchcraft. So like she's really out there in turf land with just her turfy friends doing turfy things that I don't care about.
I was like, I don't know where that was supposed to be taken, but that was
I don't care. Well, what about y'all? Like, for I mean, like we're kind of like talking about like embodiment and you know, our trauma and things like that. I don't know, like for y'all, like for this season of, do y'all have a Lent thing? Like, do you have like some sort of like relationship to this liturgical season? Or is it just kind of, another time of year for you.
I had a sneaky way of asking you what I should give it for Lent, of what people should give it for Lent. Because
Asking for a friend.
asking for a friend, I always have. I never really think about it. It's just something I've always done. Funny story, 1 year I gave up church for Lent because it's causing me so much stress.
Listen,
And
that was the best thing you could have done.
everyone thought I was so stupid and like, what do you mean you're giving up church? I'm like, I am here like so many hours a week. I am 6 years old. I am giving up Lent, church for Lent. And
Wait.
that is the best decision I've ever made.
Wait. You were at 6 years old and you made a
Yeah.
conscious decision to give up church for Lent?
Yes, because I was doing choir, I was doing sightseeing, I was doing bells, and then I was doing
Oh
Bible
my
study.
God. What, like, this? Are y'all all have, you got this chronic overfunctioning thing going? That's so interesting. From such a
Yes.
young age. And how old are you now? 18, 17,
I'm
18?
17, yeah.
Holy Moses on high. I'm so glad that y'all are like coming alive and coming into like some delicious consciousness now. That's going to be so good for you because it's the longer you go with your habits that don't serve you. Oh, what's the sans the trying to remember my yoga training. I'm just like, what's this? There's a word in Sanskrit that I can't remember, but it's basically we have all these things that cause us to like, it's like the more time something happens, the time we think a thought, it like almost like in our has a groove, a way of thinking that we just get stuck in over and over and over and over again until we realize that we're doing it over and over and over again. We ask ourselves, why am I doing it over and over and over again? And then we stop for a second and I'm like, my arm's tired. Why am I doing this?
Yeah. And so for me, I think having this conversation, using or having God more intentionally, I'm figuring out what my purpose is through God. I was talking to Faith about this and I was like, but God put me on this planet to help people. And I don't know if this was said or this is what I took it as, but God also put you on this earth to help yourself.
Yeah. Well, th and that's an interesting question right there in and of itself. It's just like purpose is a very, very tricky and interesting thing, right? Because like what is the purpose of a dog? Like a pet dog?
To be cute.
Is that its purpose? That's what it is, but is that is like is that same thing with like
Run to live, I guess to live.
its purpose is whatever. It's just being a dog, you know? Same thing with, and I what's the point? What is the purpose of a flower? What is the purpose of beautiful poisonous plants?
To find balance in the universe.
Maybe. But it's also one of those things where it's just like purpose is a human concept, right? It's something that we ascribe it to because it helps us, it makes us feel better. But in the end, it's just like I think what I mean when we say purpose is the thing that makes me come alive and makes me feel most connected to God or the sense of love or whatever we want to call it. Because we are, I mean, it's my belief, we're loved no matter what, infinitely, because, like, technically, no purpose. No purpose, no problem. And so, like, but when I let go of, like, my need to figure out my purpose or what I'm here to do, really what I'm saying is, like, what I'm here to do is, A Course in Miracles says, it is the will of God that I be happy. That's God's will for my life, is that I be happy.
I
And so
think
I,
I go on.
yeah, so just to, I don't know, just to wrap that up, it's just like I think we put too much pressure on ourselves to figure out our purpose and just like no purpose. There's nothing to be, or there's nothing to do. There's everything to be. You're supposed to do, if we want to say our purpose, from where I'm sitting, my purpose is to be in joy. My purpose is to love. My purpose is to have good sex. My purpose is to write books. My purpose is to, go to a retreat this week and then come back super refreshed. My purpose is whatever. But what makes me, what I would like to say is, like, what makes me come alive the most, I can articulate that very clearly. And that's the thing. So it's just like, sure, if it's like, I wouldn't even say that God's put us on here to help other people. I'm like, I just think that we're the most joyful when we do. And also when we help ourselves, because obviously we need it. Sorry that I interrupted you.
You're so good. I think that evangelical Christians really try to put a purpose on everything. I'm disabled. And throughout my entire childhood, they were like, oh, God gave you this disability to be closer to him.
Oh, my God.
That's the reason for it. And you,
Barry John, he gave 9. You this, so
it will tear you all the way down and you can rise up and see him. And he gave you this so you find him and meet him in heaven and be cured. That is not what I want.
What good is heaven later if you're in hell now?
I am just, and it is so tiring to hear all the time that God made me imperfect so I could reach him. That mm-hmm. is not logical. And no. Throughout my own relationship with God, I figured out that they actually what they gave me was one of the most important parts about me is my disability. And it's amazing to be able to say that. In fact, one year I gave up talking down about my disability for Lent.
You should give that up again.
I don't always participate in Lent because of a lot of drama with my family throughout the years.
Of course.
However, I gave that up one year, and it was one of the most healing experiences of my life.
Something that Lent also says is you're supposed to basically give up the things that keep you from being in spirit or with spirit or feeling spirit's presence, and add in things that help you experience the thing. So, give up talking shit about yourself, and every single day, look at your, what I tell people is look at your naked body in the mirror and tell yourself, I love you. That also healed my relationship with my body in a big way. Was someone told me, just look in the mirror naked and say, I love you. And just stay there. And she said, stay there until you mean it. And the woman who told me that, it was my therapist, and she is a fat, disabled, lesbian woman. And so she's like, I can do it. So can you. So she's like, my body's in worse shape than yours, and also is threatened more than yours. What's stopping you? What's stopping you? You think you're going to cry, and you think it's bad to cry. We're so scared of the negative emotion, or what we call it a negative emotion, but you've been needing to cry for how long? Your body has needed to do it, and you've disallowed them from giving up the shit that they need so they can be with God. Do you want to feel shame, or do you want to feel God? They can't be in the same place. And rumor has it, perfect love drives out all fear. I don't know, I read that somewhere,
I've never done that. Go ahead.
I was like, I know that you mentioned crying in this negative emotion, and I know since moving away college for me, I have started crying more, and not even just the sad tears. I don't think I have happy cried since I was 6 or 7, and then mm-hmm. all of a sudden every month there's usually something that makes me so happy I just start crying. And I think it's so curious how mm-hmm. Religion strives to just take that away from you, and then capitalism says it's unproductive to cry, so why even bother?
Ugh, because if you start crying now, there's also the lie, if I start crying, I'm never gonna be able to stop. So they put that into the weird psyche of everybody, and it's it's built in. You will exhaust yourself and pass out eventually. It's built into the human body. It's, you cannot physically cry for forever. And if you did, I would want to know how you did it. But that's exactly it. And like, this is the thing is when we can recognize it's not our fault. Like, if whoever you are out there who, I don't know who needs to hear this, it's not your fault. It's not your fault. It's that one, like this one scene in Good Will Hunting where he just keeps saying, it's not your fault. 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 And it is your responsibility to do your work. Not so that you can be good, not so that you can be like more productive, but because you deserve to feel good. Because you deserve to feel as loved as you are. That's it. Not because you're a failure, but because you want to feel better.
Yeah. Faith, did you have a thought right before you might may or may not disappear?
Okay, at the beginning you used the term lukewarm, and I was yelled at with that word all the time growing up, even
oh
if
yeah
I was like a child, and like I would be in the hospital getting treatment and they would call me a lukewarm for not going to church on Sunday, like things that I was not in control of.
I just want to hold you for like a minute and say, oh my God. And also, fuck them. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
That's rude. And that's... Keep going though.
Okay. I'm sorry?
I interrupted you.
Oh, no. I just said it's a little much. Like, even... I mean, like, they would form prayer circles around me, like, to try to heal me.
Oh yeah.
And I mean, if you have thoughts about that, I'd love to hear them, because I mean,
I do.
The forced healing of my disability really gave me false hope. And
yeah.
I mean, growing up, now I realize I don't want a cure. I don't want my disability to be gone. However, yeah. Like,
'cause again, there's nothing wrong with you.
Thank you.
No, that's literally like what we have to say to ourselves is I have to look at my brain sometimes because it doesn't function the way like everybody else's does, because I'll get real frustrated with myself, like there's nothing wrong with you.
It's like, this, and like growing up, I felt like everything was wrong with me because my body was not built correctly. Mm-hmm. Like, what's the correct way for a body to be built? But everyone told me that I was manufactured wrongly.
But God like, doesn't make mistakes.
Yes. And then they say that. They turn their back and say that. And then they say that God is going to heal me. Heal the perfect human they made. Like, I was just like, the errors in their logic were coming to me from a very young age. And once I was 7 years old. Actually, I was six. It was close to my seventh birthday, and they were forming a healing prayer circle around me. And I looked at the pastor who was right above my head, and his hand was on my head. Mm. And I was like, what are you healing? And I wanted him to answer. Like, I wanted him to say what he was healing about me, because I was so curious. I wanted to know what he felt was so wrong with me that it needed to be prayed out. And he could not look me in the eye and tell me it was my disability. He thought I was too young. However, he was doing it to me anyways.
Ooh, when I tell you, that is horrifying. And also, they put me in the middle of the prayer circle to get the demon of homosexuality out of me more than once. And of course, like, I played along. Because, like, what else are you supposed to do to survive that moment? That's wrong. And it's like, my thoughts on things like that is just like, it's the people who are doing that are severely misguided. They think they are doing something loving and they cannot see that they're doing something terrifying. I think it is a sad mark of evangelicalism to be distrustful of science. Now, here's the deal. Like, I don't think that, like, the laying on of hands is a beautiful thing. To ask God to heal somebody is still a beautiful thing. But, like, for something like cancer. That's pray for that. But it's also one of those things where it's like, if faith healing was a thing, why aren't faith healers just walking through the hospitals, just healing people left and right? Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. So that's the, I mean, like, I was there though too. Like, I was praying. I wanted to see blind eyes open. I wanted to see the dead raised. I wanted to see the lame leap, et cetera, et cetera, et
Oh,
cetera.
I was praying for it to be gone myself because they told me to. They told me you need to pray this out of you.
Yeah.
Like I was 6 years old and I was sobbing at my in my hospital bed because I wanted this demon to be out of
Yeah.
me. And
And that's
I
what it was. It's like they attributed to things that aren't real. I'm just like, it's not, we don't have demons, just that we're built different. And that's so dope. And like the thing about it is like the moment we, like you probably say this about yourself too. Once you stop hating yourself, you started loving yourself and it feels so much better.
It does.
What a
It's it was
fucking
so reassuring.
concept.
The first time I like was really like I took a step back and I was like, what in my life would be different and what in my life would be the same if I wasn't disabled? And they were completely different lives because everything good in my life has come from my disability. And
Damn.
that's not saying if I was not
Yes.
disabled, I wouldn't have good things in my life, but everything good in life has come as a snowball effect from growing up in the hospital, from being a disabled kid. And so like that, like stepping back and seeing that, like the most healing thing I have ever experienced.
Ugh. Put that in a bottle right there. That's a sermon. And the thing about it is like, that is the story that needs to be told. It's like, this is, and this is something very interesting, is like, the text for the Sunday, or like, I think I did a podcast with somebody else specifically about how to teach on the passage in John 9 where Jesus heals the blind person by making the mud and whatnot. And it's just like, well, I don't, it's like, well, what do we do with the miracles of the Bible? I'm just like, don't know. Here's the deal. You ain't Jesus, and he ain't around right now, and nobody here has the faith to heal me either, allegedly. And apparently I don't have the faith either, so fuck me, right? Fuck my drag. But it's very, very strange, like wrestle with those things. And like that's why I'm partly, I like when I hear stories about that, I'm like, I'm not gonna say it's not possible, but I am just unconvinced. And also, I think that it's violent to tell disabled people that their bodies are wrong. Like, I think it's just like it's violent to tell queer people that their bodies are wrong, or trans people that their bodies are wrong, or women that their bodies are, you know, the whole, to tell anybody's body that their body is wrong. Like, I think the most healing thing I've ever done for myself was just like to stop trying to fit myself into like the sexy gay Ken doll body that every boy worships. Like, it's just, it's not, it's not that it's not possible, but the cost is astronomical. And I know men with a perfect body who hate their body. They go to the gym all the time, they work so hard, and just like, I mean, I could go on forever, but just like, it's learning to love our bodies is not an option. And by that, I mean, it's just like, if you want to be happy in a million ways, truly, there's a very, very quick thing. It's give up the lies that you learned about yourself. Give it up. Don't, it's one of those, oh, I'm going to try and change, I'm going to try to be nicer to myself. No. Stop being mean to yourself. Stop allowing the bully, who's no longer here, by the way. It's just you in your head. You know, that happened years and years and years and years ago. You know, whatever happened to you that's keeping you stuck here, that's happened to you how many times? But you're here now. But in your head, it's happening hundreds of times a day. Stop it. Look at yourself and just be like, no. Something I started doing, like I actually, that Gollum Schmeagle moment I had at the beginning, I had to do that to myself. I had to do that for a long time because I would casually say, God, I hate myself. And I would catch myself saying, I was like, no, I fucking don't. I love myself. I'm actually trying really hard right now. And then eventually I stopped saying it because I learned to love myself. And as also I want to say, it is, people always, oh, it's so hard to do. It's so hard. No, it's not. It is not difficult. It is different. Like loving yourself, loving your body is no harder than hating it. You've just been hating it for longer, so it's an easier habit. So give up your self-hate for Lent. Give up hating your body for Lent and replace it with active love, active loving. Because that's also the thing. It's not enough to just say, I'm not going to do something. That barely works. Deprivation is not a route to self-control. Practices. Let me not keep going because otherwise I'm going to talk. I was on a roll. Spirit was coming in.
No, it was good. I know I one of the things I saw on TikTok one time is walk into the room with the confidence of a middle-aged white man.
A
And that is the
mediocre
motto.
middle-aged white man.
Mediocre is also part of that, yes. And I know that like I was coaching state at state swim meet for high schoolers this past
Nice.
weekend. It
Very
was a lot
good.
of fun. We won. And so
Congratulations.
me and my head coach got shoved in the pool. And that was an exciting time. And one of our freshmen had to like jump into one of the relays and was not comfortable with any of it. And I was like, look, we cannot change this situation anymore. And like you have to swim this relay. Your best option at this point is to go like do some confidence building in the pool. And like literally stop telling yourself that you can't do it, that you're bad at it. And by the end of the meet, that's what she was doing. And it was so amazing to watch her do the best she could in these swims and competitions. And it's like, as much as that was not the goal, is to get her to swim faster for me personally. It was to have her be confident in herself. And also, this one time, it happened to be a byproduct of like really a change of mindset.
It's, I would say that little shift right there. And I'm not saying like, I don't want to like tell anybody, like, if you can't make the switch in your head quickly, like sometimes you have a coach right there next to you to tell you, hey, just go do this, 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 and this. And just, it'll turn out better. And hopefully you have like, we don't have enough movement chaplains in the work. Another conversation for another time. But if you don't have that like support system there in the form of a coach or in the form of a pastor or in the form of a youth group or in the form of friends or whatever, just know that if you can't do it right now, if you can't make that big switch in your mindset today or right now, you don't got to like totally do a 180. The point isn't to do a 180. The point is, what did you say? To feel good in your body, to feel a little bit more confident in doing whatever you're doing. That's it. That's all spiritual practice in life ever is just not fully 180. Turn the dial just a little bit. Can you move from miserable to maybe just a little bit less miserable with a little bit of love? And then from a little bit less miserable, maybe you move to just, I'm feeling a little groggy. You know, it's those little baby, the question I always have for myself when I'm stuck in a mindset of like fear and whatever it is, it's like, what will I do right now to return to love? How can I feel that presence? How can I get myself to feeling okay again? And what would, and also like, not if, what will I do? Because it's my responsibility. I am the steward of this body. This body is in distress right now. What will I do to calm him? What will I do to love him? And by golly, it is worth everything to give my body what he needs.
Mic drop.
Yeah.
That is,
Also, my laugh is horrifying. Like I was telling you, I was at this yoga retreat this weekend. I am a loud person. And when I tell you, because like I've got my loud laugh, I could have woken the dead in this place. So many Buddhists, so many very.
You just said not to hate on yourself, and that's exactly what you just
You
did. I'm
know what? You're
calling you
right. Thank you for doing that because I actually apologized to somebody for my laugh. And as I walked away, I said, I just apologized for my laugh. That didn't feel good. And so you're right. I'm a laugh louder for Lent.
Period.
Period.
Okay, well, I think that is about all the time we have, Kevin. It has been such a good time to have you on the podcast.
Thank you for
Thank you so
having
much.
me.
Of course,
Like,
and you are welcome back anytime.
listen, if y'all ever want to do trading spaces and like come on my podcast and talk about your lives and what you're doing, or if you want to talk about AIM or whatever, like you always, it's an open invitation. And then I can ask the questions.
And then you can ask the questions because, believe me, behind the scenes, we ask ourselves lots of really good questions. So I'm sure you would come up with
Oh my
something.
gosh, I was taking notes this whole time, and I'm gonna like journal after this. Like, I'm really excited.
Well, sickening. Love y'all.
Okay, before you stop recording, we need a quick intro. We need Kevin to explain himself. We didn't do
Oh,
that.
sure. Yeah, we can do that. So you can
I
just.
think Kevin explaining himself is a good way to do this.
Yeah. Yeah, who are you?
Who are you?
Hi, my name is Kevin Miguel Garcia. I'm 33 years old. I'm a Scorpio living in Atlanta, Georgia. I'm a what my internet, I think what my website says is I'm a spiritual recovery coach. I call myself a mystical theologian and practitioner because I am. And I'm the author of Bad Theology Kills, which dropped 3 years ago, and my new book, which is forthcoming in January 2024, called What Makes You Bloom. And hopefully by the middle of summer, it'll be available for pre-order. So if you want to get in contact with me, you can follow me at thekevingarcia.com.